If it's happening today, we're talking about it now. Join us, 203-333-9422. The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600.
And welcome back to the show. It is 4 weeks from Election Day tomorrow, although millions of people in America have already started to vote. And I know that the absentee ballot boxes behind our town hall in Westport, because I work there every afternoon, have a tremendous amount of activity. And the data is showing that because of the fact that our Secretary of State decided this year to allow everybody the chance to vote by absentee, many of our citizens prefer it. And they are taking the time to fill out the information they received in the mail and then formally request their absentee ballot by putting that envelope in the back of the box at your local town hall. So that process is in order. And then soon, the ballot itself will be received. And when you get that ballot, if you're choosing to vote by absentee, I cannot stress this enough, you not only have to sign your ballot, but you have to sign the envelope on the outside of the ballot that is sealed, that contains your vote, your actual ballot vote. You must sign that as well. Then you put that envelope into the other envelope that you then either hand deliver back to that box in town hall or you decide to mail in. But don't forget, you're actually signing twice. You're signing your ballot and you're signing the envelope outside your ballot. And if you want to change your mind and decide to vote in person, you only have until the Friday before the election to let your town clerk know. So joining us now, this is all very important. Oh, then one other thing I wanted to let you know, I saw this morning that among all the different emergency bills recently passed by our legislature, here's one that only applies, believe it or not, to Bridgeport. This is how they craft a bill. It's like spot zoning. This is a spot bill. It says the Secretary of State has to contract with an individual to serve as an election monitor in any municipality with a population of at least $140,000, it says, i.e., not that dollars, 140,000 persons, i.e. Bridgeport. Query, wouldn't Hartford also have 140,000 people? For the 2020 state election, the monitor must conduct inspections, inquiries, and investigations of any duty or responsibility required by state election law. It authorizes municipalities to conduct certain absentee ballot pre-counting procedures, etc. But the bottom line is for Bridgeport, there is going to be a special person to serve as an election monitor. So, and that's because of a history of shenanigans in Bridgeport, or at least perceived and reported shenanigans in Bridgeport. 203-333-9422. Joining us now is Jennifer Leeper. She is running as a Democrat. This is her second try in office. She ran in the special election versus Brian Farnan last year, but that was only a one-year term. And now she's trying again. Brian Farnan's the Republican. Jennifer Leeper is the Democrat. She lives in Fairfield. 203-333-9422 is our number. 203-333-9422. If you've got a question or a comment, something you want Jennifer to know or that she can answer. Jennifer, welcome. Thank you for joining us today on the Lisa Wexler Show. Good morning.
Thank you so much for having me, Lisa. I'm excited to join you today.
There's just so much information, Jennifer. I apologize for that long-winded intro, but there's so much stuff I have to let people know. There's a lot going
on. There is a lot going on every day.
There really is. So, Jennifer, first of all, tell us a little bit about you. We want to hear about you. What brought you to this place in your life where you want to run for public office?
Absolutely. You know what? I get that question a lot. Why in the world would anybody want to do this? So my background is really in public policy and data analysis. And I got my master's in public policy at the University of Chicago back in 2011, and truthfully never considered running for office. Public policy is really a wonky pursuit where you are using econometric models to find marginal benefits, and politics felt incredibly far away from that type of work. And then in 2016, I was actually working for the State Department of Ed up in Hartford. And after the election, I realized we are really not well served by this chasm, you might say, between good policy and our politics. And I just felt compelled to try to narrow that gap. And so I ran for Board of Education here in Fairfield and won. And I've been serving in that capacity since 2017. And I've loved it. And then, as you mentioned in the intro, we had the special election January 14th, this past January. And I thought that the same was true about narrowing that gap between good policy and data-backed solutions up in Hartford. And Connecticut has a tremendous amount of challenges, and they're really complex challenges. And I think tackling those from a data perspective is a great way to build common ground, which I think people are hungry for. This division is exhausting. And I don't think people are exhausted from it, and they want to come back together. It does not feel good to live in this type of political climate. And so I think data is a great way to find common ground and work toward building solutions. And that's exactly what my campaign has been focused on.
So Jennifer, okay. So we're chatting with Jennifer Leeper, 203-333-9422. So let me ask you about sort of the issues that I'm asking, frankly, all of our politicians about when they come on the show. And I would like to know, and I think the people of Fairfield would like to know, how you will vote on them if you're given an opportunity to do so in Hartford. One of the movements going on is this movement to desegregate Connecticut. And it is, that's the name of the organization, Desegregate Connecticut. And as a policy initiative, they have a couple of bills in the state, in the House of Representatives, and one in the Senate, with respect to trying to take more regional control over local zoning. Where do you stand, and how do you feel about that?
So that's absolutely a really hot topic in Fairfield right now. And it is true. I think Connecticut is the third most segregated state in the nation. So this is certainly not an issue that can be ignored. But if I'm elected to represent Fairfield and Southport, that is my priority. And I think that there are some really meaningful adjustments that we could be making to 830G, let's say, because that has been a very contentious bill, I think, across the state, but certainly here in Fairfield, because we are already quite a dense community. And people don't want to see us become Stamford, for example. We have sort of this, we are a large town, but we have a very small town feel. So one of the things that I think we could do to both work toward desegregation, but also honor the community's feeling of not being overly dense, is amend 830G to allow for credits to be earned for the open choice students school districts accept. So hopefully that could have the effect of both better incentivizing suburban communities to accept more open choice students into their empty seats, and also helping communities work toward that 10% affordable housing, which is a very, very challenging goal to reach. So Fairfield's been working towards that for 30 years, and we are still, I think, at 2.3%. We're about 2 years out from a moratorium, which is progress, but there's a lot more to go. We've only gotten here after 30 years. And so I think if in the short run we could work to better desegregate our schools, then that is a step in a positive direction.
So that's an interesting approach. We're chatting with Jennifer Leeper. So you're saying, to the extent that, for example, the ABC houses, but they're minimal. They're one or two in a community. To the extent
you have an ABC house. We don't actually have ABC house in Fairfield. Yeah. What we do is we accept students into our empty seats through the open choice program, which is you get paid by the state per open choice student. There are a lot of misnomers about the open choice program. It is a revenue line on the Board of Education's budget. And if students receive any special education services, which of course cost a town more to provide, the accepting town bills the sending town for those services. So it truly is like a revenue generator for the community. I think it is also a life-changing opportunity for children. and that
who gets to make the open choice? How do you have a lottery for it? In other words, how do parents find out about it? I see.
It's a lottery system, yes.
Okay. And then if so, and is it available, like, you know, borders Fairfield? So that's the obvious, right? Bridgeport's the obvious town that you would do an open choice from. So if a parent has kids in the Bridgeport school systems, they can enter them into a lottery. And then if the school, a particular school, has an opening, they can get. Now, once they get in, are they set until the end of high school? Are they set to be in the system forever? Or every year do they have to do another lottery?
Okay. Nope, they're here. Once they're in, they're here, as long as they want to stay. And yeah, all the suburban towns to our cities have the opportunity to participate in this program. And currently Fairfield is only accepting, I believe the number is 86 open choice students. And we really could be doing a lot more. We've had a minor dip in enrollment, which means we have more open seats. And Westport, right next to us, the school district's about half the size of Fairfield, and they're accepting twice as many open choice students as we are here in Fairfield. So I think there's a real opportunity for us to be doing more.
So that's one way. Now, that doesn't address, however, that's an interesting way to approach desegregation in schools, but it doesn't address the movement towards regionalization of housing choices. And in fact, this movement, Desegregate Connecticut, you know, as far as I'm concerned, 830G just works around the edges. They would rather abolish it altogether. What they want to do is they want to say that the state should be able to basically local zoning boards and eliminate the consideration of character in making decisions. So let me come back to ask you on a bill like that, notwithstanding your policy initiatives, how would you vote?
I don't think we should be regionalizing all zoning. I think that is a very, very quick way to lose all trust in local officials and our local system. I think we need to find ways to continue to build local buy-in to these types of initiatives, build transparency so people are not so distrustful of the process. And, you know, as far as the character element, I think we could actually be better suited by being more specific. Nobody wants to feel like it's possible for a 5-story, 40-unit building to go in right next to them in their little neighborhood. And so I think if we could define that these types of projects must still meet certain local zoning restrictions, such as setbacks and height, nobody
well,
wants to have to
do.
Worry.
But
A30G can override a lot of those. So I think that,
I know.
That is a big, big concern and a reasonable one, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. We're chatting with Jennifer Leeper, 203-333-9422. The subject of tolls comes around almost every session. What is your position with respect to tolls?
Honestly, I think it's a no-brainer. Nobody wants to pay tolls, and I understand that. But the reason we took them out was a safety concern that is no longer relevant. And everybody can agree we must invest in our transportation infrastructure. Our trains have gotten 20 minutes slower round trips a day than they were 20 years ago. And that is just not okay. We would not accept that type of technological regression in any other aspect of our life. So that's 20 minutes fewer people get to spend with their families every day. And also, it's a big economic issue. There's a study saying that every minute closer to New York City you are on the train line is $11,000 more in your home resale value. So getting 20 minutes slower a day is having a huge economic impact on a community like Fairfield. So we all agree we need to do this investment. Now, how do we pay for it? The Republican proposal was to bond it. I cannot imagine anything Connecticut needs less of than more debt. With a bonding package, we would be paying 100% of this plus interest. The toll, and there have been a lot of different toll proposals, so it's hard to pinpoint exactly which one. I don't think anybody wants to feel like they're going through 40 gantries on their way down 95. But the estimate is that 30% would come from out of state. You know what? If I only had to pay 70% of my income taxes, I would be pretty thrilled about that. So I think it's a no-brainer. And we have the technological innovation to be able to charge in-state drivers less, or if you have a gantry in your town, you could lower the cost for people within that town. These are all things that are done all over the nation, and there's no reason we couldn't do them here in Connecticut also.
We're chatting with Jennifer Leeper, 203-333-9422. Jennifer, what is the number? It's the 132nd district, is that right, Fairfield? The 132nd?
Yes.
And you're running against Brian Farnan, and Brian Farnan is running, he was elected, it was a special election for just 1 year. So this is technically, it's not quite an open seat, but it's almost an open seat because Mr. Farnan has only been there vis-a-vis 1 year for a special election. What does the registration of the 132nd now look like, Jennifer?
So, of course, like I think almost every community in Connecticut, the majority of voters are unaffiliated voters, meaning they're not registered to either major party. But now we do have more registered Democrats than Republicans.
In Fairfield?
In the 132nd.
In the 132nd, pardon me. Are there any towns other than Fairfield that are encompassed in the 132nd?
No, we are Southport and Fairfield. So Southport is... A part of Fairfield.
Got it. Well, Jennifer, let me give you the last word. Is there any message that you would like to tell people that are voting? Just one more campaign message or something about you that they would want to know, that they should know as they cast their ballots?
Absolutely. You know, I really do think people are exhausted with our political status quo, and that we need leaders who are committed to listening and proposing solutions. It's very, very easy, especially in a campaign season, to speak in sound bites. And I think people deserve real proposals and solutions to the issues we face, because the truth is Connecticut faces really complex issues, far beyond, quote, wasteful government spending, which we hear all the time. Nobody's on the side of wasteful government spending. It's how are we going to tackle these problems? And I think we just need fresh voices and a new generation of leaders. And I'm committed to doing that. I have two young boys, and truly that's what has motivated me to do this type of work. I want to ensure that they have a better society to inherit. And I want to be a part of that. So thank you so much for letting me be a part of your show today.
Well, you're welcome. Before you go, I have to tell you, I have another life as a probate judge. And your age, yes, I'm the probate judge of the Westport Weston District.
That's wonderful.
Yes. And so what I wanted to let you know is I never let a politician off the air without making a pitch for the probate court system, because I practiced in it for 30 years before I became a judge. I practiced as a sole practitioner in the area. And, you know, God willing, you'll never have to walk in there at your age unless you're changing your name or adopting a child. Other than that, the kind of matters that we deal with are fraught with sadness and grief and just a whole bunch of disruption that you wouldn't want to have in your life. But I do want to say that throughout this entire COVID crisis, we have remained open, the entire system. We haven't skipped a beat. The only thing that we've changed is going from in-person to virtual hearings. But even that, back in July, I started to go back into St. Vincent's in the hospital for in-person hearings, because as soon as I was able to, I felt that was the best way that I could help perform justice for these people that are mentally suffering in these hospitals. Because the probate courts do all the mental illness proceedings, as well as guardianships and conservatorships. And we do more family in terms of our docket than we even do wills and trusts and estates. So I just want to make a pitch. If you get elected, I have been one of the judges that advocates for our budget year after year, just by way of introducing you to the fact that it's a very accessible, open-hearted system with a lot of compassionate people in local town halls trying to help people. And we haven't skipped a beat during COVID.
Thank you for all you do. I'm so glad you mentioned that. I'm actually really good friends with Fairfield's probate judge, Kate Neri Maxim. And I know Fairfield is so lucky to have her.
She's wonderful. She is.
And, you know, I remember her saying, you know what the probate court is? The probate court is life court. And when hardship in your life knocks on your door, you will be really thankful to have the probate court. So thank you for continuing to serve people likely going through some of the hardest things life could throw at you during this time.
It is. It's never easy. But what I love about the system is that it is so town-based. In other words, you know, you elect your judge, you know your judge is accountable to your community, and, you know, that keeps you, you know, on your toes, which is really good. It's really good for the state.
Absolutely.
It's a good system. Yeah.
It is.
So, Jennifer Leeper, good luck in November. Thanks for coming on the show. It's been nice to get to know you, and thank you for running. Thank you for running.
Oh, thank you so much, Lisa. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Sure. We'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show coming up.